WEEM Weekly is a bi-weekly podcast produced here at 91.7 WEEM that provides information and fun conversations about and with the Madison County community. You can find previous and upcoming episodes at 917WEEM.org or wherever podcasts can be found. Thank you for tuning in to 91.7 WEEM Podcast, WEEM Weekly.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of WEEM Weekly. This is our seventh episode after quite a big break. We had a big month-long break for IASB, which is the competition that our station is a part of. And we take the whole month of January to work on submissions, and we even started a new podcast in that time.
We did.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot. We've been busy. Obviously, we took a little break, but we are back and we are so ready. This layout is a little different than what we are used to. We only have two segments. However, one of the interviews is 40 minutes long.
Who are we interviewing that's 40 minutes long?
That would be mine and Reagan's. And we interviewed Officer Shiloh Mast. He's a Department of Natural Resources officer. And yeah, we just had a lot of questions, had a lot of time. And we had it was an amazing segment, an amazing interview. We played some games. We did like a little trivia of how many birds did he know? Because he's a
bird. Does he know a lot of birds?
Yeah, he did. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a super interesting interview, and we hope that you guys enjoy it because that is going to be the second segment. Shell, she is the public library, Pendleton Community Library, youth service librarian, and she talked a little bit about the events that are going on within February and then on to March and kind of spring break. So yeah.
Anything I should be looking forward to?
Well, there's some book clubs, but I think they're out of your grade level. Yeah, I mean, Game Corner is always something that they have, which I learned something new that they actually restaurant sponsor Game Corner. I didn't know that. I actually work at the library, so I had a little bit of inside knowledge. Mm-hmm. But I learned something new, and I was really, really excited about that. I thought that was super cool.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yep. So coming up right now is that interview with Miss Rochelle, the youth servants librarian at Pendleton Community Library.
My name is Zion Palmieri, and today I'm joined with...
My name is Rochelle Collier, and I'm the Youth Services Librarian at the Pendleton Community Library.
And I'm Brooklyn Schuyler.
So you work at the library, you coordinate events. What does your job totally entail?
A lot of things. I do promotion like I'm doing now with you guys. I do a little bit of the social media, so I like make these cool flyers. I do... like ordering of materials. So I buy the books for the teen collection and I buy books for the kids at the book clubs. Lots of purchasing of materials. A lot of my job is shopping, it seems like.
So if the library wants to have an event or X person wants to have an event, what does it look like to physically like actually plan out the event, coordinate it, you know, mark it in the calendar, how far in advance? How does that work?
Sure. I live my life about a month and a half to 3 months out at any given moment. So right now, we're almost at the end of January and I'm planning out for April right now. So I guess the first step is you have to request the rooms, make sure that the rooms are available. What I do is I make like a materials list of, okay, I need these craft materials. I have to make the flyers. You got to post those on the website, promote those on Facebook. Actually setting up the physical room. So maybe like moving tables and chairs the day of. There's a lot that goes into it.
So what are some events actually going on this month at the library?
This month at the library.
Looking into February.
So I guess the first thing I'll bring up is we have Game Corner for the teens, so ages 13 to 18, the first and third Wednesday of the month. And the first month is always sponsored, or the first week is always sponsored by Qdoba and Anderson. So we have chips and queso. And the third week of the month is sponsored by Pizza Hut in Pendleton. So we have pizza. Last time we played Jackbox game, or We played Beast Gang, and then this upcoming Game Corner, we're going to play Jackbox games. So that happens in the teen room from 3 to 5, so like right after school. And the winner always gets to pick the game for next time.
But I did not know that we were like sponsored by other restaurants and things. I thought it was just like, oh, that's just what we got.
Yeah, they're very kind to give us donations.
How does a company, if you know this, sponsor Game Corner?
Well, those sponsorships were set up when I took on the role of youth services. But I think it's simply reaching out and asking business partners like, hey, we've got this really cool thing for the kids at the library. Would you be interested in helping us out or giving a recurring donation and just keeping up with that in terms of, I mean, you asked about like what goes into programming, being a good steward of those donations and making sure that the word gets out that they are sponsoring those events. That's an important part of it, too.
Do you have like a quota kind of for how many events you try to do in a month or plan?
It depends on the month, honestly. Like February is a shorter month, so there's just going to be less stuff going on. March, we've got spring break, so I'm trying to have more events during spring break than I normally would. But I think I aim for, you know, and again, I do events for kids ages 0 to 18. So it's kind of running a wide spectrum, but I try to have like anywhere from like 9 to 11 programs a month.
Do you run out at a point and you have to really like sit down and be like, okay, creative time, like really?
Yeah. Usually like when I walk into work, the first like 20 minutes is just like, okay, I need to brainstorm and like write everything down. Like any ideas I have, Pinterest is my best friend, especially for story time for the little kids. I can bring up those dates and times too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, story time. Story time is aimed for ages 0 to 6. I will read usually for the first like 15, 20 minutes. Then we do a craft for 15, 20 minutes. And then the last 20 minutes is playtime. The dates for those, and I always like to have a theme for things. So the dates for those for February are February 12th is Valentine's Day themed, and then February 20th is feelings themed. And those happen from 10 to 11 in the morning before everyone gets too tired and cranky, ready for nap time.
How do those usually go? Is it more like structured to the younger kids, the older kids? Like, how do you do such a big range of age?
Yeah. So a lot of libraries will do like, you know, we've got baby tummy hour and we've got toddler time, and really make it narrow like that. But in our community, like, you know, a parent might have 3 kids under the age of 5. You can't just leave the baby at home. Yeah. So I try to be inclusive with my crafts and make sure that even like if a baby can hold a pencil, they can do it with mom or dad's help, you know. So I try to just kind of aim for the middle, maybe slightly easier crafts. Maybe the 5-year-olds can hold scissors, but not everybody can.
Yeah.
Now, to take a little work off your shoulders, can people from the community like request events and say, this is kind of what I want to happen?
Oh, yeah. We get lots of patron requests. This is in March, but I had 2 patron requests that I was able to fulfill next month. Last year, I didn't get this request until it was like a little too late to do anything about it. But someone suggested we do a green eggs and ham story time where we also make and eat green eggs and ham. So for Dr. Seuss's birthday on March 2nd, I'm going to have a green eggs and ham story time, and we're going to have little egg bites. I also had a suggestion to do like an intro crochet class for the tweens, so like 8 to 13-ish, and that's going to happen over spring break. So yeah, send all your suggestions to us. We definitely want to hear what people would like to see from the library, because we're here to serve the community.
Crochet is a big thing in this town.
Yeah, you're a tween now, Brooklyn. Brooklyn really wants to learn to crochet.
Do you? Because we have teen crochet on the first Saturday.
Did you
Saturday.
Hear there's a club that's being started about crocheting? Because we just, I mean, there's so many. There was one that's like a patron is leading it, but there's a crochet club there.
And that's got like 30 people. That's like a big one.
Big. And then there's that, obviously. There is a teen one.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a teen one and a tween one?
No, the tween one's just kind of going to be a one-off. I guess if there's enough interest and enough kids are really into it and kind of, because I don't know how to crochet. So that's a little bit of a barrier for hosting those. Like with the teen crochet, like the girls all know. And if you're a guy, you can come too. But the girls already like know how to crochet. But for like an intro, like beginner crochet lesson, like, I have to bring in somebody to do that.
So I just mentioned that one patron actually runs an event of some sort. And then there's also the teens who run a like little crochet club. How much of a part do you have in that? Do you try to be involved in that? Is that just completely separated? What is that?
So with the teen crochet, at this point it is kind of patron led, we would say. I drop in every, like, the first Saturday of the month just to be like, do you guys need materials? Do you guys want Pop-Tarts? Like, everything going good? And just, like, check in and see how they're doing. But other than that, like, my responsibility would be just to simply, like, book the room. And kind of along the lines of the adult crochet or, like, fiber arts, or I think it's just the kind of general fiber art craft time for them, because they told me I could bring my sewing.
Whoa.
So it's not just crochet. But again, I think the staff kind of part of that would be like making sure the room is booked, making sure that whoever's hosting it has like undergone a background check. That's an important thing when you're bringing in like guest presenters or whatever. And yeah.
Awesome. Is there any other events that are going on in February that you'd like to highlight?
I've got two others, if that's okay. The first one is I am starting in the fall. I had first, second, third grade book clubs. Then this spring, I'm doing fourth, fifth, and sixth grade book clubs. So the format of that is like I will purchase like, I don't know, a dozen or so books for a group of 10 kids. And I'll do a little book talk and tell them what the book's about, if there's anything important about the author that might be interesting. And then they get to vote on like which one they want. And if there's, you know, multiple people want the same book, then there's a little like games to see who can win it. And that format seemed to go over really well in the fall. So I'm continuing that into the spring. So it's not like a book club where you have to read the book before you come and we talk about it, because kids have enough school to do, I think.
fourth, fifth, and sixth grade do have like already books that they're reading in school. So that's kind of nice to have like a different thing to do.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it a little more fun. So the first round of that will be fantasy February themed. So like princesses and knights and dragons and stuff. And you can sign up for that on our on the library's website. The date for that is Monday, February 23rd from 6 to 7 p.m. And registration for that opens February 7th. And then the other thing I wanted to highlight just really quickly is our library. I don't know if you guys knew this, but our library has a food pantry called Read and Feed. And you can come in, no questions asked, and get so many items to take home with you of like non-perishable food items. We get produce sometimes. But in the month of February, we are trying to feed the love. So we are asking people to bring in either like canned goods, oatmeal, peanut butter, stuff like that, for the food pantry. Those can be dropped off at the circulation desk or anytime during an event.
Well, that's going to about wrap it up. Thanks for joining us. That was pretty insightful. Hopefully some people can find some new events that they want to go to, or maybe suggest an event. But yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for thinking to invite me. I really appreciate it.
Now, here's a short promotion before our next segment.
OMG, did you see 917 WEEM's new Instagram post?
Yeah, how do they always have the coolest content?
Keep up to date with what's going on in the station, as well as around the campus and community, by following us on Instagram, X, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube.
Online, on air, and on demand. 917 WEEM.
Welcome back to yet another segment of WEEM Weekly. I'm Brooklyn Schuyler, and today I'm going to be joined by
Shiloh Mast.
And Reagan Butler.
We're going to be talking a little bit about your job because it's maybe not a job that everybody knows a ton about, but can maybe take some guesses and then some things that maybe you can't take some guesses about. So to start us off, what exactly is the Department of Natural Resources?
Okay. So the Department of Natural Resources is a state agency that has multiple divisions within it with the main focus of managing Indiana's natural resources. So some of those divisions would be the Division of State Parks and Reservoirs, Division of Water, Division of Law Enforcement, where I fall, Division of Fish and Wildlife. So like I said, I'm a member of the Law Enforcement Division of the Department of Natural Resources, and I am a conservation officer. So what a conservation officer is a law enforcement officer at the state level. So I'm a state law enforcement officer. I can enforce all state laws, including criminal and traffic. So I could pull you over for speeding. I can arrest you if you commit a crime. But the difference between me and, say, like a state trooper or a deputy is my focus. My focus is natural resource laws, like hunting laws, fishing laws, boating laws, ATV laws, laws on state properties, and everything in between.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you say, I guess, conservation, I think immediately my first thought is like parks and stuff. Where mm-hmm. exactly would your region type be if okay. not a park?
So I'm not assigned to a particular park. I am a state law enforcement officer, so I have statewide jurisdiction. Only a portion of my job takes place on state property or state parks. But it all depends on the time of year and season and stuff like that. I am assigned to Franklin County, which is in the southeast corner of Indiana. My closest state properties would be Brookville Reservoir, Whitewater State Park, and I do spend a lot of time there. But I'm a little far from there for this, and kind of just goes to show that I'm everywhere and nowhere at once.
Okay. And then, so when you speak about like your daily kind of tasks and activities mm-hmm. as a law enforcement, but in the DNR, what is the difference between like a police officer and you when it comes to like daily tasks?
That's a really good question. So daily task, like I had mentioned, it's all based on my focus. My focus is natural resource laws. So I'm not running radar on the highway, per se. Mm-hmm. My focus would be what's in season, what's going on, pertained in the natural resource realm of things. So I guess we'll start with like summertime. I'm on boat patrol a lot. I'm patrolling around Brookville Reservoir. I'm talking to fishermen, checking their licenses. That's what my summertime consists of. And then moving into fall, it's a lot of hunting enforcement, making sure everyone's following the rules, not poaching. And then coming into winter time, right about now, this time of year, I maybe take on a little bit more of a traditional law enforcement role. I'll help out our local sheriff's departments and police departments on calls or whatever they've got going on. I do a lot of public events like this, coming here, talking to you guys. I teach education classes a lot in the winter. So like hunter education, trapper and boater education, different kinds of public appearances just to spread awareness about what I do and inform and educate people on our laws and how to ethically have fun outdoors. And then springtime, it's kind of a blend of a lot of things, you know, getting better weather, getting out on the lake, doing more boat patrol. There's a lot of fishing going on in the spring. And so, yeah, my job is different every day. It changes like the seasons change.
That is actually one of our questions is like, how much does the season change your
job, does it depend on the day? So like if it suddenly starts to snow, we might get like a 2-hour delay, but does that mean like your like tasks for the day could change? How do you get assigned, I guess, what you're going to do?
So I don't necessarily get assigned to what I do, but you're right. The weather and what's going on throughout the year does drastically change my day to day. I like to say, you know, snow, rain, sunshine, Indiana conservation officers are always on patrol. There's not a really a set I needed to do this today. It's a pretty independent job, so I don't have a ton of like supervisor oversight. It's what I think is necessary to get done that day and what I think is productive. It just all depends. No day is the same.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I would have never thought of like, I mean, I guess I'm in school, so that kind of gives me a different outlook. Is like, I am used to getting task after task, but like in that field, you can kind of like do whatever, but you're always doing something.
Exactly. It
necessary.
Was a lot of training, and it takes a lot of trust from my supervisors and to have earned that ability to kind of patrol my community how I see fit. So there is sometimes some oversight, like, hey, like we need you on the lake today. But then there's other days where, you know, I just kind of roll with the flow, whatever needs to be done. I could wake up one day and do a river rescue, like someone's stuck in the river and I have to go get them out. And then the next day I'm doing something like this, talking to you guys. So every day is truly different.
I kind of wanted to ask about that. Yeah, you said that, you know, there's not a lot of oversight or whatever. So when you come in to work, you can just like, if you feel that, I don't know, a reservoir needs to be patrolled, you can just go patrol it for the day. And
yeah,
that,
that's kind of, I could, yeah. But I try to follow what's in season. So where are the people at is where you're going to find me. But for the most part, I leave my driveway in the morning. And the second I leave my driveway, I'm at work. You know, then when I come back home and end my shift in my driveway, I'm done. So it's just what happens in between. A lot of the time, it's up to me.
That's kind of... That's kind of cool. I would have never thought of that, honestly.
I didn't even think about that,
So, but it does take a lot of, you have to have the confidence of your supervisor. So, you know, I've maybe got a lot of paperwork I got to go do. So I have to make sure I have the time management skills to stop going out and having fun and checking people and doing stuff like this. Make sure I keep caught up on my paperwork. And it's a good balance. And yeah.
Has there ever been a day where like, I assume there's other conservation officers in your area where everyone's like, you know what? Today's the day. Like, I'm going to go on the lake. And then, like, everybody goes to the lake and you got to be like, somebody's got to leave. Has that ever happened?
Every once in a while, yeah. Usually, like, a boat patrol, we've got two, three guys out. Sometimes all in the same boat, sometimes separate boats. It just depends. You know, is there a holiday? Is there a lot of people there? Yeah, sometimes like, yeah, well, there's already two, three guys out on boats today patrolling. I'll stay on shore and check fishermen that way. You know, it just all depends. And then there's some days where maybe it's necessary to have a lot of people out on the water. Just depends.
Okay. So there's obviously a lot of like different ways that you could even interact with the conservation officer. I keep thinking artist, and that's just definitely not what I'm supposed to say. Ways that you can interact. Was there like an interaction that you had that maybe persuaded you to get into this job? How did you get into it?
So I first learned about this job during seventh grade career day. And ever since then, I'm like, I have to do that job. That sounds like a blast. And I took the steps to get here from that career day. So for me, like doing stuff like this, hopefully will spark interest in some of you guys or anyone watching this to maybe at least consider a career in becoming a conservation officer.
Okay, that's a really interesting way. I got to remember what my seventh grade career day is because in that is my future.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, heck, you could be a late bloomer too and decide later on. There's no set rule that says, oh, seventh grade career day, you have to be a conservation officer. That's the only time you can decide. When I got hired on, there was a 44-year-old that hired on with me. He was a teacher for 20 years and retired as a teacher and decided he wanted to become a conservation officer afterwards.
Was he like a science teacher? natural progression.
I want to say math.
Math?
Yeah.
What?
I could be completely wrong, but
math would be a crazy jump.
It would be a different jump. That's for sure.
I mean, and you know what? I was just thinking about it. I walked into the classroom today, little association. I walked into the classroom today and decided I was going to be a heart surgeon.
There you go.
Because I got a 96 on my anatomy test.
Heck
so maybe
yeah.
you get a, like a good score on your biology test, and that's how you become a conservation artist.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm artist. Officer.
You're good.
Okay. Yeah. So who knows? That's kind of a really interesting way to get involved.
So everyone has a different path, and every conservation officer has a different story of how they decided they wanted to do it. Some have a lot of background and interest in the job, and then others, you know, they maybe have not as much of an outdoors background or a background of some sorts along the lines of that, and they decided, hey, let's hop on over and have some fun.
Was there any reason that you went specifically into like the law enforcement department or section, and does it depend on like your area or where you live?
So the law enforcement side of it is what was the seventh grade career day. It was conservation officers that came and talked about their job. And it wasn't until later on in life that I realized how big the DNR really was. Like, I mean, there's thousands of employees. There's biologists within the DNR, laborers, managers of state properties. There's all kinds of different career paths within the DNR. But I think the law enforcement side of it, the interest kind of stemmed from my grandfather. He was a police officer for a long time. And kind of like, I don't know, it just seemed like a really like, oh, perfect fit. I love being outside, and I got a little bit of family background with it. And actually, before I started this job as a conservation officer, I was a police officer in my hometown, you know, wearing blue, actually doing traditional law enforcement work. And I always knew I wanted to do this, but doing that job, it made me realize how much I enjoyed law enforcement work. And then now I get to combine my, basically my hobbies with my chosen profession. So it's kind of the perfect blend for me.
I feel like, especially here in Indiana, because I think a lot of outside work is like Indiana. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel that way. Is that that's like a big contributor to, maybe hobbies that you have, and then being able to apply those to something
absolutely.
Like police work.
I love to hunt and fish, and I like to go out and hike. I like to go out and boat. All the stuff that I enforce the laws and regulations on, I like to do myself. So it is, you're exactly right. It's a perfect blend, and it almost adds like kind of like a little stick of passion there where it's like, okay, like I have a stake in this too, because I care so much about it on my personal time as well.
Do you, if you had to pick another like department to be in, do you know what one you would be in?
Ooh, I don't know. I've never really thought of that. I've always just seen myself as a conservation officer in the law enforcement division. When I heard about it, I'm like, that's what I'm going to do.
I mean, that works, you know, you're like the perfect spot.
Exactly.
So a little bit more of like a fun question, kind of switching gears. Have you ever been on a plane for patrol before?
I have not personally. I'm not going to rule it out. There has been officers that have patrolled by plane or been a part of a detail that maybe required them to be on a plane. So hopefully that day maybe comes. I think it'd be super interesting. I'm sure it's a logistical. It's a lot of work. I'm sure it's a lot of logistics probably behind it to get on a plane in a, you know, working capacity, but I think it'd be really interesting. I'd love to try it one day.
I think it would be fun to apprehend someone on a plane. I don't know how you would go about that.
I don't know either. If I figure it out, I'll let you know.
Yeah, really. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. How, like, you maybe you could jump. I don't know.
You never know. If I figure it out, I promise I'll give you guys a call.
Is there a vehicle that, like, you have maybe been on for patrol or even just, I don't know, in some instance that you really liked?
So the vehicle I patrol out of the most is my truck. It is my office. It has all my stuff in it. Everything I need is in my truck because my traditional like office or post, as we call it, it's about an hour away from where I live.
Oh.
So I do a majority of my paperwork out of my truck. It's got everything I need in it. But I'd say favorite vehicle to patrol on. I love patrolling on a John boat. It's kind of a smaller boat. You can weasel around pretty quick. And I love that boat. But I've got a big patrol boat that I'll patrol on a lot. I have four wheeler. I have a side by side that I can drive on, like a John Deere style all terrain vehicle. Some conservation officers in the northern part of the state have snowmobiles.
That's a question. There's
all kinds of different vehicles that we patrol on, but the one I use the most is my pickup truck. And then second would probably be my boats.
Mm-hmm. So when you're on a boat, because mm-hmm. obviously that's a fun one. Have you ever done, so obviously you're still a police officer. Mm-hmm. Boats, I'm thinking like, what are those called? The like drunk driver, but on a boat,
like a DUI. Or
yeah,
absolutely.
Have you ever done like a test to see if someone's drunk?
We call them BWIs, boating while intoxicated. That is against the law in Indiana. You can't be over a 0.08 if you're going to be operating a boat while consuming alcohol. But yeah, there is a set of sobriety tests that are designed to be done while someone is sitting down. Because obviously if I'm on a boat, I can't have someone do like a walk and turn or stand on one leg and show me their balance. So I am trained in how to do seated field sobriety. It has all the same elements and such that it would as if you were standing. It's just in a seated position that makes it a little easier to do on a boat.
Yeah, or I would assume that'd be really...
if push comes to shove, I can take them to shore and we can do the testing there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of options, but seated field sobriety, it's a nice tool to have on boat patrol if I stumble into somebody that's maybe had a few too many to drink.
Have them like swim in a straight line.
Yeah,
we were joking about
We're not going to be doing that.
That'd be pretty cool though. Except I couldn't probably swim in a straight line like sober. So I'd be like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is also the same thing with like the counting backwards in the alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know the alphabet by heart.
But that's not one of my tests.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have one that's like?
So there's at least with the sitting position, there's the eyes. There's a palm pat test. There's a chest test. It's kind of like a walk and turn with your hands pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole slew of things. Finger to nose. There's a lot of different kinds.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah,
that all show the same effect that it would if you were doing a standard or a standing field sobriety test.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is like the coolest part about your job?
Oh, personally for me, I love doing stuff like this. A lot of like community outreach stuff. I love teaching the classes, like hunter education, boater education. Like I said, talking to you guys about my job, going to schools and doing career days, kind of like my 7th grade career day. I get to go do the same thing. That's probably my favorite part. Interacting with the public in any way, I really enjoy because, like I said, all of my hobbies really lean into my profession. So if I'm checking someone who's fishing, I really like to fish. So I can talk about fishing with somebody and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting paid to enjoy my hobbies vicariously through somebody else and you know, maybe teach them a thing or two, or maybe they can teach me a thing or two. And just, I say anything to do with just interacting with the public is probably my favorite aspect of the job.
You've spoke a little bit about these classes.
Mm-hmm.
Where would classes like this be offered?
So every county in the state will host a hunter education program, sometimes more. You can go on, our website, I'm trying to think of the actual URL for it, but you could search it online. Just type in Indiana Hunter Education and it'll have a list of classes that you can sign up for. It's free of charge. Come hang out, have a good time, learn a thing or two, hopefully.
Do you usually, so like what age range would you say that you usually teach?
I teach my classes geared toward anywhere from 8 to 9 years old. That's at least my teaching strategy is for younger kids like that. I've had kids that are 5, 6 years old pass. And then I've had like 50 year olds come and take my class as well. So hunter education is required, for anyone in the state.
Okay. If you're going to hunt. That.
Yeah.
I also don't hunt, but like, that's interesting. Exactly. And I didn't know you could do it so young.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is it is it the same test for like a 5 to 6 year old as it is like a 50 year old? Mm-hmm.
Exact same test.
I would feel like a genius if I was that 5 year old and I just passed
the test. There's a few questions you got to really pay attention throughout the day, but yeah. My classes are usually they're mandated to be 10 hours long. The questions on the test are, there's 100 questions and it's true, false, multiple choice. It's a very doable test, mm-hmm. but yeah, if anyone's interested in hunter education, look us up online, come on out and learn something. And then for anyone older, because there is a certain cutoff, I can't remember off the top of my head, if you were born before a certain date, you're not required to take hunter ed. But usually if there's someone older taking the class, maybe they're interested in hunting out of state. Maybe that state they're going to requires them to take hunter education. And so they'll come take the test. So it's really open to anybody. Like I said, for your charge, come spend a day with me and learn a thing or two. It's fun.
Interesting. And where do these classes, like, where are they held?
Usually wherever the officer or like our volunteers can make contact with somebody who's willing to host our class. In my area, we teach them at a lot of conservation clubs. Schools. I'll go into schools and teach the classes as well. So maybe in lieu of like a health class for like a week, I'll go in for a few hours here and there and teach hunter ed. Yeah, that's usually where we would have them at.
Interesting. Going back to the more nature, I guess, side mm-hmm. of things. You obviously work outside a lot, maybe not as much in the winter, but in the summer, spring, whatever. Is there an organism in Indiana that is like the biggest problem for conservation officers?
Good question. A particular organism.
Yeah. So it could be like animal, person, if you want to shout out a name.
I think for anything to do with an organism being a problem, I would direct you guys to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They'd probably give you a lot more educated of a response, but I'd say personally, probably any kind of invasive species or anything that would maybe take away from Indiana's natural occurring organisms or mammals or whatever. But for a better answer, I'd recommend look on the Division of Fish and Wildlife's webpage. They've got a whole slew of information that you can look at and learn a lot more about organisms that are affecting Indiana.
No person. You don't want to shout out a name.
People can be an issue sometimes too. It just depends on the day or the person. Mm-hmm.
So we did do a little bit of research on, I think lantern flies are an invasive species.
Okay.
Something that's lantern-y. And on your guys' YouTube, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, there's these two dogs. Their names are Q and Ethic, I think. I was just wondering if you've ever met them. They're really cute.
This is the first time hearing about that. I'll have to look into that, meet these pups.
They're really cute. And I think they're trained to eat lantern flies.
Huh.
I know. Which is kind of genius, to be
fair.
Well,
I've got my homework cut out for me then tonight.
Just go on the YouTube and there's Q and Ethic. I think that's their names.
Yeah.
They said it really quickly, but I think that's their names.
My guess is that has something to do with Division of Fish and Wildlife.
Okay.
We do have canines. Conservation officers do. I don't personally have one, but we have canine officers and our dogs are pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. When you think of a traditional police dog, you think of maybe sniffing drugs or maybe a bite dog or something along the lines of that. But our canine unit is trained in like wildlife detection, so they could smell ducks or fish, whatever, someone's maybe hiding some. They're trained in tracking like people or article searches, so like if somebody threw evidence out the window of their car or something along the lines of that, our canine teams could track it down pretty good. A lot of our dogs are like Labrador retrievers, German short hair pointers. Our district's canine is a flat coat retriever, so it's not like a German shepherd like or a Belgian Malinois like a regular police department would have. Indiana hosts the training as well, and other states will attend our canine training, and even other countries will come, like their conservation officers in other countries may even attend with their canine units as well. So yeah, we use our canine teams pretty frequently. It would be an awesome role to have within the department. Hopefully one day, maybe I'll be there, but at least as of right now, I just get to watch them work and yeah, they're a great tool to have as a field officer. I know I can call our canine officer. His name is Zach Walker. I can call him anytime and him and his partner. Her name's JC. She's the flat coat retriever. She's the sweetest. She'll come out and help me out with anything if I needed it.
Interesting. Yeah. So I know you spoke about like preferring the more like class education type mm-hmm. side of your job, but if you had to choose between like maybe more like law enforcing, like police officer work compared to like natural, like nature conservation work, which would you choose?
So the beauty of my job, it's kind of the best of both worlds because mm-hmm. it's the laws surrounding the outdoors. So I have that law enforcement element every day infused within my regular patrols or, you know, everything that I do. It still has a law enforcement plug to it, but that focus is natural resources. So yeah, it's the best of both. But with me having a law enforcement background, I do enjoy that side of things. So it does make it interesting.
So what advice would you give to someone that wants to be in your position or even just in your department?
I would say get out and be outside, be in shape. Swimming is a big requirement for our job. Just get in the best shape you can, start swimming, start running, volunteer with different state parks or reservoirs in your area. They're always looking for good volunteers. So kind of build your resume and stay in shape and reach out to us, ask us questions, come on a ride along, things like that, just to make sure it's the job that you want. But there's a lot of different ways that people can prepare. There's not one set path, but one thing's for sure, just make sure you're in the best shape you can be physically, because it is a pretty physically demanding job. A lot of walking, a lot of miles on the boots.
Talking about walking, do you guys often patrol? So we, again, from the website, of mm-hmm. course, one of the responsibilities was patrolling streams. How often do you patrol like a stream, and what does that include?
Patrolling a stream, I would say something along the lines of that. It would be me driving alongside it on the road, looking to see if anybody is fishing in there, depending on the size of the stream, or if anyone is littering in there, dumping materials in there, anything along the lines of that. Actually, last week I had a guy who was pushing a burned down house into a stream.
Oh.
So I had to have a talk with him about getting it cleaned up. And so kind of like we were talking about earlier, a good combination of conservation and the law enforcement mm-hmm. side of it, because it is illegal what he was doing. So yeah, that was, I guess that's how I would patrol a stream.
How do you push a house into a stream? Yeah. You got to, that's impressive.
It was pretty impressive. I wasn't a fan of where he was pushing it, but he had like a bulldozer and he was like burning it down as he was pushing it. So it was a lot of just debris and burn. It was a big mess.
Like a good idea.
It wasn't.
Yeah. Do you have the DNR website? So we've been talking a lot about this website.
Mm-hmm. That's where we got a lot of this from.
A lot of our research was from this website. And, you know, I think it has mentioned quite a few things that you do. So I'll say my sources are pretty good. Do you have that bookmarked so that you remember?
I do have our DNR website bookmarked on my computer and phone and stuff. But the responsibility section, I don't relatively refer to it. I've had a lot of training and a lot of time on the job now. So I pretty well know what's expected of me during my day to day. So I don't have to refer to that portion of the website, but I do have that website bookmarked because it is full of information, whether it be me providing it to somebody or quickly refer to myself. Like if I want to find those dogs, I may go look on our website. Yeah, Q and ethic.
Look them up.
Lantern flies.
Exactly.
And then
should I go get ready?
Yeah. He's gonna. I'm excited for a little.
Yeah. So I guess while we wait on him, I'll go ahead and explain a handful of the different specialties we have within the Division of Law Enforcement. So I kind of talked a little bit about like our canine unit and our detectives. But within like every conservation officer, not every conservation officer, but conservation officers are offered and can apply for specialties. So beyond like your daily patrol or anything like that. So I'm a public information officer. So I get to do a lot of stuff like this. I do Facebook posts for our department. I talk with the news channels. I do press releases. That's what a public information officer would do. We have tree stand fall investigators, boating accident investigators, canine unit, like I already said. We have a river rescue team, a group of people that are specialized
I'm so
in.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
You look good.
Thank you. Can you tell what I am?
Are you?
It's a little small.
Like an off-brand Sherlock Holmes or something.
I'm a detective.
Yeah.
Fingerprinting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is detective one of the like lifestyle or specifications that you can do?
Yeah, that is one of our specialties. Drill instructors for our training. We've got all kinds of stuff that, you know, you can lean into if there's a certain portion of the job that you most like that you can try to shift toward or try to get on at or to do just something a little extra. Another big one is scuba diving. We have a scuba team.
How big is that in Indiana?
It's actually pretty big. That's one of our bigger specialties. We have a lot of divers, whether it be diving down for evidence or recovering a person if they did drown. The list goes on and on of the things they do. Yeah, we have a ton of different specialties within our additional daily task and stuff.
How much do you think that, like, I guess on a percentage scale, does that specialty influence your day?
I think it would depend on the specialty. Like our canine officer, I mean, it's a full-time gig for him. Mm-hmm. That dog's on patrol with him, constant call outs, like getting called by other agencies to assist, other conservation officers to come help them out. Our detectives, it's a full-time job. But a lot of the other specialties, like public information officer, it's kind of just something a little extra here and there that I can work on. And there's no one set like, oh, I can only have one specialty. We have people with multiple specialties that they do at one time because they don't take up all day or it's an everyday thing. It's just, that's kind of how it goes.
So it sounds like a lot of, I guess, your job or the department in general is that you can really do a lot within each department and each section, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not limited like at all.
No. It is not. It's a very, you can make the job how you want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like I sought this role out as a public information. I keep pointing to my chest because I have the pen there that says division spokesperson. But because I like this kind of thing and I kind of sought after this specialty, you know, you can make the job how you want it. There's people that enjoy scuba diving that maybe in their personal time, they're like, oh, I want to do that in a work capacity as well. Yeah. It's a pretty interesting thing.
It's really interesting. If I'm like, I want to be a scuba diver. And I'm like, Indiana is the place to be. But, I mean, you can.
There's places to scuba dive here. Yeah.
That's interesting. And you know what? One of those specialties, as you mentioned, might be detective.
Detective Reagan. Yeah.
He's got it all set up.
Oh, we did have one question about tree and shrub dealers in Indiana.
Oh,
and how big
question.
Of a problem are they?
We read on the website that you have to look into illegal tree and shrub dealers. And we took that as they're like drug dealers, but with trees and shrubs. We found out it's like Lowe's or Home Depot is a tree and shrub dealer. Yeah.
So something along the lines of that, that I would particularly have an interest in would be like timber theft. So timber as in trees and theft. Someone's stealing trees. In Indiana, to buy or sell timber, you need to be a timber buyer or a timber agent. It's like a certification you have to get to do those things. Sometimes people will do it unlicensed. They will rip people off. Maybe a tree's worth a lot of money and they kind of lie about the value of the tree, or they say they're going to go cut. Oh well, yeah, we'll go cut these trees for you. And then they cut different trees. So every once in a while, I'll investigate a timber theft along the lines of something like that happening. But I've never gone to Lowe's and checked their shrub dealer paperwork.
Maybe you should do that after this.
That's my next stop.
Check the local store.
There could be a whole world of illegal tree and shrub dealers you don't even know about. It's just right.
I got to do more homework. Same with the fingerprinting, yeah. I guess.
And Q and Ethic.
Yep. Lantern fly eaters.
I'm excited about that one.
They're really cute.
What kind of dogs were they?
The like Australian Shepherd looking dogs.
Okay.
Yeah. And they eat lantern flies, so you'll know. I wonder if that's their main meal.
Probably not.
Like, is that their job?
I'm sure
their
they
dinner?
Get fed kibbles or something.
True.
That's why they're so good at hunting. They just like starve them. They're like, all right, time to eat.
Oh my gosh.
And that's why they're horrible. So good. They have such motivation, you know?
Yeah. So there was another one. And you did talk a lot about being on boats. Are there bait dealers that you have to deal with?
No. I don't think I've ever interacted with a bait dealer, or if I have, it's never been for like inspection or anything like that. But say like there's fishing guides that need to have their boats checked for compliance and stuff like that. There's definitely a whole slew of inspections that I have to do. I've never done a bait dealer inspection. A big one would be game breeder inspections. I do those pretty frequently. Like someone with pet foxes or pet raccoons that, you know, since it is a wild animal, they need to have proper documentation for it. And I will go and make sure their facilities are adequate and sign off on their paperwork and all that.
Have you ever seen like, I've seen this on like TikTok, but have you ever seen like someone who has a pet raccoon and it just lives in their house with like their dog and friends?
Absolutely, I have.
That's so cool. I want a pet raccoon. That'd be awesome.
Make sure you fill out your game breeder paperwork, okay?
I will. I would not want to. Yeah.
Or your wild animal possession permit.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
What is the craziest like wild animal that you've seen be owned by a person?
Most of them are pretty tame. Like, not tame, but kind of like what I said. Like raccoons, foxes.
Squirrels.
I don't know if I've had a pet squirrel before.
I see a lot of people with pet squirrels. Like, I think
once I have.
As a detective?
Yeah. My detective work. I've seen.
Yeah. Quail, pheasants. Quail's kind of like looks kind of like a chicken, almost. Those are the ones that I mainly deal with.
So speaking about chickens, they are a type of bird, and we have a little quiz for you.
Okay.
How well do you know these birds?
I heard from someone that you're really good with birds.
I do actively enjoy bird watching.
So
birds.
birds.
Okay.
So which one's that?
Is that a pekin?
Okay, wait.
Or a puffin?
I'm going to have to like pull up my puffin, I think.
Yeah.
Please hold. Sorry about that. Puffin, you're correct.
Okay.
That one.
That is a hummingbird.
Has anyone ever owned a hummingbird?
Not that I've seen. Okay. No.
What about that one?
A toucan.
What about that one?
That is a blue jay.
There are so many red cardinal birds in Indiana. And I did not know that. But I see them all the time. Did you know that?
That what?
There's cardinals?
Like cardinals.
I see them all the time, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you looked surprised. And I was like, finally, someone.
That is Indiana's state bird.
Yeah, it's a state bird, too.
Oh, I knew that because of Ball State. Anyways.
Ooh, is that a... that's on the tip of my tongue. Not an emu. It's a...
Starts with a C.
You're going to have to remind me.
Cassowary.
Cassowary. Oh, yeah, we don't have any of them running around.
Yeah,
no.
He's our resident bird knower.
In my detective years, yeah.
Heck yeah.
I learned a lot about birds.
I'm a big bird guy.
Really?
Next.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's pretty,
I have never seen that. What is that?
It's based, it's not based off of, a Pokemon is based off of this, I think.
That was the other one.
Oh.
That's a different one.
This is a finch.
There's a lot of different finches in Indiana, and I have never seen whatever that kind of finch is.
Oh, this was just the first one on Google. What about that one?
That is a great blue heron.
Yeah.
That is a turkey.
There are turkeys in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
How often are turkeys a problem in your...
So they're not so much a problem for me. They're actually a really good thing. People hunt turkey. And at least where I'm at in the state, we have a really healthy turkey population. So I have to interact with a lot of turkey hunters, and I turkey hunt myself. And
okay.
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting. But Yeah, they're actually a really good thing for our job. The success story of turkeys is really cool in Indiana.
Has there ever been like a situation where like, I don't know, a bird or really any animal has like attacked a person and you've had to like tame the animal?
I've had to chase down and tame some animals, but I've never had one attack somebody.
Okay. How about that one?
Ooh, that is a tree swallow.
Yeah. That was impressive. That's all I got. Yeah. that was impressive.
Thank you.
Except that was a really bad image too. So,
I'm impressed. Yeah, you guys did really good with that.
I do.
And your knowledge of the cassowary was really impressive.
Oh, yeah. That was the only one I didn't.
If you find one, give me a call.
Oh yeah.
Because I do have, like I said, I'm a bird watcher, kind of. I keep a list on my phone of all the birds I've seen.
Really?
And like where I've seen them at and if I can get a picture of it, time, date, stuff like that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I've got a pretty extensive list of all the different birds I've stumbled into.
That's actually where we got this idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I figure.
Is there any animal that you like interact with the most?
Ooh. A lot of deer.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be someone hunting deer and I'm checking them or deer stuck in fence, if a deer is hit by a car and I have to put it down, do a crash report for somebody that hit a deer. Deer's quite a bit. I take a lot of birds to rehabbers, so like hawks and eagles and stuff like that. If they're injured and I get a call about one or I stumble into one, I scoop it up and put it in a pet carrier and take it to a rehabber. Owls is a big one. Those are the main animals that I probably interact with the most.
Okay. And then final question here. Do you have a favorite like memory or moment being like on the job that you can recall?
Particular moments, really hard. Some of my favorite stuff is like stuff like this, like I said. Even the days where nothing happens, but I get the off chance to ride around with a coworker because my job's pretty independent. Like mm-hmm. I don't really work with too many people all the time. But if I do have the opportunity to ride around with a coworker and patrol together, you know, even just grabbing lunch with them, those are some of my favorite memories. Some of the funny stuff that I run into or that I see on, you know, someone out doing or something happening. Like yeah. It's a lot of like little tidbits pretty much.
And you mentioned that like your day is different every single day. So
exactly.
It's always, maybe
there's
something.
Always something new. There's always a new memory made every day.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sitting down with me and Reagan, yeah. Detective Reagan, as we like to call him. And yeah, thanks for teaching us a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys or any of your listeners are interested in a career as an Indiana conservation officer, do your homework on it. And well, we'd love to have you.
Keep reading that DNR website.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. That will be the end of this segment and of this episode. So thanks to everyone watching and bye-bye.
Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have. That was another episode of WEEM Weekly, Episode 7. Definitely a great time to be here. Definitely some interesting interviews all around this time.
Yeah, I definitely think that we definitely stepped it up with our interviews. 40-minute long interview. Sounds really crazy, but we had a blast. That was so much fun to record. And we had some special guests. We had Zion in the event planner interview, and then we had Reagan in the Officer Shiloh Mass interview. So we had some special guests, spiced it up a little bit, and maybe you'll see a little bit more spice, I guess, coming up.
Yeah, definitely looking forward.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Once again, that was another episode of WEEM Weekly.
Thank you for listening to the WEEM Weekly podcast. Join us next time at 917WEEM.org or wherever podcasts can be found.